Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. The California Department of Food and Agriculture's Pest Exclusion Branch is announcing two midterm vacancies on the Industrial Hemp Advisory Board. The California Department of Food and Agriculture's Industrial Hemp Advisory Board was established by the California Industrial Hemp Farming Act. The board is composed of 13 members, and a term of office for board members is 3 years, as outlined in the Food and Agricultural Code Section 81001. The Industrial Hemp Advisory Board makes recommendations to the CDFA Secretary on all matters pertaining to industrial hemp law and regulations, enforcement, annual budgets, and a setting of an assessment rate required to accomplish the purposes of the California industrial hemp law. Members meet at least once per year, but may meet more frequently if needed. The members receive no compensation, but are entitled to payment of necessary travel expenses in accordance with the rules of the California Department of Human Resources. The board has two vacancies of members that shall be representatives or who are registered as growers of industrial hemp. These successful candidates will be appointed to serve the term, which expires on May 31st. Individuals interested in being considered for this board appointment should send a completed applicant questionnaire to the Industrial Hemp Program by May 31st. For more information and information on where to send the application, contact the California Department of Food and Agriculture. A temporary local emergency for Madera County was declared due to fears about a virus that affects crops and poses a risk to public health. Concerns about the beet curlytop virus came after officials reported an increase in populations of the beet leafhopper in the wildland and agricultural areas of Madera County. Officials say this has precipitated a concern for the spread of the beet curlytop virus, a disease known to cause serious crop damage, as the beet leafhopper is known to help spread the virus. According to the California Department of Food and Agriculture, crops susceptible to the virus include tomatoes, sugar beets, melons, peppers, beans, hemp, cucumbers, squash, pumpkins, and spinach. According to officials, the impending crisis has the potential to severely impair public health and safety, which necessitates a proclamation of a local emergency to obtain a standard level of public protection for the county. California Citrus Mutual is committing Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow of the Senate Agriculture Committee and Chairman Glenn Thompson from the House Agriculture Committee for prioritizing the citrus industry's fight against Juana Longbean in each of their frameworks for the 2024 Farm Bill. Each chair's framework continues support of the emergency citrus disease research and extension programs at $25 million per year for the life of the Farm Bill. This is a significant step towards reaching a bipartisan Farm Bill compromise that will continue critical research to find a cure for HLB, according to CCM President and CEO Casey Creamer. While this isn't the finish line, it clearly signals that Congress supports maintaining citrus funding. The $25 million in funding will go to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Institute of Food and Agriculture, to fund research to find a cure for HLB. The funding is overseen by grower representatives from California, Texas, and Florida. There are plenty of big strawberries from California as Mother's Day approaches, a holiday that often sees higher consumption of the popular berry. There are plenty of big strawberries from California as Mother's Day approaches, a holiday that often sees higher consumption of the popular berry. And the strawberries are looking fabulous, according to Steve Johnston of G.W. Palmer & Company Incorporated. The heavy rains of the 2022 to 2023 raining season in California have really helped the ground, and that's making for a beautiful bumper crop in the state, he says. On top of that, growing conditions in the state for strawberries have been ideal, with occasional rains, but also sunny days and cool nights. This has made a perfect combination for a great big berry. The size and condition are strong right now. You couldn't have better quality going into the Mother's Day poll, he says, adding that the size in some cases adds up to an 8-count, 1-pound pack of berries. In terms of growing regions, Oxnard is winding down its production at the moment, with several shippers starting to divert product to processors because the market is so low. The size of the fruit has given shippers more than anticipated. That leaves Santa Maria and Salinas Watsonville as the primary production areas right now. The quality is good from Oxnard, but there's just so much coming in from those other regions that people want to switch to the new area. While demand is strong, it is coming up against that oversupply of strawberries, which means it may be a tough year market-wise. One of the upsides of the large-sized fruit is that labor is readily accessible for growers. There's such a bountiful crop that some pickers are making $30 or more an hour. He says it's just easy picking on small plants. The pickers will tell you where the good strawberries are, according to Johnston. Growers in California's Salinas Valley continue to deal with lingering anthracnose pressure, which is the primary reason that romaine supplies are limited. Anthracnose is a soil-borne disease that is mainly found during the spring months when California is experiencing rain. Rain splashes the soil containing the fungal spores up onto the plant base. Most problems can be detected and avoided by harvesting crews, but some damage that is not as easily detected is being seen in finished packs of commodity and value-added romaine items. More importantly, field yields have been dropping, with some lots experiencing as much as 20 to 30% loss. Fortunately, the situation is expected to improve. Warmer conditions and very limited to no rainfall over the next days will help slow the spread. While inspectors may still see some fields with sporadic damage, they do expect to see quality and yields start to improve.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
Removing and replanting an almond orchard can be one of the most difficult decisions a grower can make. Besides old age, the decision comes down to the overall health of the orchard and where it's trending, which of course can be caused by a variety of ailments.
Is it a plateau on the yield year to year? Is it a slight decrease? And then if it's a slight decrease, what are the potential reasons for that, right? I know plenty of growers who had very old orchards that were still producing well, but the main issue they were having was they didn't shake well because they were getting too big, even though the yield was still there. But most of the time, there's some level of decline.
That was Cameron Zuber, who's an orchard crops farm advisor in Madera and Merced counties with University of California Cooperative Extension. At the point of realizing orchard decline, Zuber said, the question then becomes about the cause of decline and whether it can be remediated now with minimal inputs. Determining exactly the cause of decline could not be more important in a life or death scenario of the orchard.
So if you're dealing with common replant diseases, let's take nematodes, while there might be solutions to manage for that pest now, the cost of it may not necessarily make the most sense, especially dependent on yield, right? Placing trees costs money and time for it to get up to being profitable and helpful. So along with that goes into the input costs, which can be variable year to year, but depending on what crop you're growing, tree nuts or fruits and which ones and where you are, those input costs can also be a determining factor, even though your yields might still be the same or increasing. So those you may not have a lot of control over, but it is a part of the math that at least some growers think about.
Zuber puts almond replant issues into four categories.
Physical and chemical factors, or sometimes called abiotic. And these are typically ones attributed to like non-biological reasons or organisms. So they can be things like salinity buildup, an existing high or low pH that the grower may or may not already be aware of, hard pans that may not have been addressed, variable soils, degrading soil properties that make infiltration an issue and other stuff like that. So again, I'm not talking about like, you know, nematodes and critters. It's more like abiotic and chemical factors. The second category, aggressive pathogens, which feeds into the other two, is biological organisms. So they could be ones that typically, in a replant example, these are ones that will continue to persist, right? So they could be anything from like verticillium wilt or stuff like that. However, from that aggressive pathogen category, I tend to pull out plant parasitic nematodes and Prunus replant disease into their own, because those tend to be the main ones most growers are concerned about. So that's where there's a lot of information and things that I can help them with. So with plant parasitic nematodes, and I do want to pause and say there are many types of nematodes. These are ones that are detrimental to plants. Just because there are nematodes doesn't mean they're bad. It's all about context. But for plant parasitic ones, there's various kinds, right? And which ones those are and which ones you have is very much can inform what you can do about it. And then Prunus replant disease, which we might talk on further, is kind of related to it, as it is also some sort of soil pathogenic complex that can impact the overall tree growth. And why we care about them and why we want to manage about them is because they impact the growth of your trees, which then can impact your yield. And that could just be not just killing them, but also just reducing their overall vigor. So those are the primary, the four categories: physical and chemical factors, aggressive pathogens, plant parasitic nematodes, and Prunus replant disease.
Zuber offered some final words of wisdom when thinking about replanting.
Take the time when you don't have it. Flipping an orchard into another orchard is a lot of time, it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of stress. And it's tough to think about problems you're not thinking about. And it just takes a little time and think about what you can do in a short amount of time to just get you thinking about it. And that's why I tend to recommend satellite images, because it's easy, it's fast, it's cheap, and it gives you kind of that spatial view and overview of the overall site. So I can't speak to every individual, but figure out what you can do to kind of like think about how much time you might have to dedicate towards potential problems and replant issues that you may not necessarily have thought about. Because it's, while there are potential solutions after planting, sometimes it's best to deal with it when you're actually replanting that orchard.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456.
The business research company's Avocado Global Market Report 2024 is a comprehensive source of information that covers every facet of the market. As per TBRC's market forecast, the avocado market size is predicted to reach $21.55 billion in 2028 at a compound annual growth rate of 7.3%. The growth in the avocado market is due to the increasing demand from end users, such as the food and beverage industry. The North America region is expected to hold the largest avocado market share. The avocado market size has grown strongly in recent years. It will grow from $15 billion in 2023 to $16.24 billion in 2024 at a compound annual growth rate of 8.3%. The growth in the historic period can be attributed to health and nutrition trends, changing dietary preferences, culinary trends, supply chain improvements, and globalization of markets. The avocado market size is expected to see strong growth in the next few years. It will grow to $21.55 billion in 2028 at a compound annual growth rate of 7.3%. The growth in the forecast period can be attributed to continued health consciousness, diverse culinary applications, sustainable agriculture practices, expanding global production, and exploration of new markets. The increasing demand from end users such as the food and beverage industry is expected to boost the growth of the avocado market going forward. The food and beverage industry refers to all businesses that handle the processing, packaging, and distribution of uncooked food. Avocados are highly nutritious and versatile and can help improve heart health, digestion, and weight management. Incorporating avocados into a healthy diet can provide multiple health benefits and help individuals focus on a healthier lifestyle. Several new storage facilities with avocado storage and ripening rooms are being developed and implemented in the avocado industry to improve efficiency, reduce waste, and enhance product availability. Major companies operating in the avocado industry are focusing on technological advancements such as personalized AI-driven for personalized recommendations, enhancing farming practices, and optimizing supply chains to improve production efficiency and meet market demand. Scientists are trying to find the best ways to mix solar panels and working farms. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has more.
If you want to stir up a lively debate, just start talking with farmers about agrivoltaics,
which is when solar power is co-located with agriculture, like grazing or crop production on solar fields.
So-called solar farms. Jeff Marudian with the Department of Energy says some farmers are embracing the idea of using their land to generate and possibly sell power. Others hate it. DOE is funding some studies on it, for example.
We're funding Iowa State University to demonstrate and evaluate horticulture and beekeeping at a 1.35 megawatt solar array on campus. They're exploring how solar farms can be modified, for example, by changing the height or tracking of the panels to accommodate agriculture.
Researchers are also developing enterprise budgets to help farmers sort out the economic pros and cons of agrivoltaics. And according to Jeff Marudian,
we believe there are opportunities to provide clean energy and increase farmers' revenues while keeping farmland in production.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The American Farm Bureau Federation has encouraged House and Senate Ag Chairs are out with Farm Bill proposals, and there's a House markup date. But AFBF acknowledges partisan fights continue. AFBF's Joe Gilson, Director of Government Affairs, talked about top House Ag Democrat David Scott's flat rejection of Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson's proposal right after its release.
We're still seeing folks go to their corners right now, but I think by May 23rd, the date of the markup, that might change depending on how individual members feel about these bills. But right now, certainly the ranking member, Scott, is still opposed to the framework that has been proposed.
Because the framework stresses work requirements and restricting SNAP benefit updates, which is the same partisan hurdle in a Senate Ag Committee.
I think Chairwoman Stabenow has made it pretty clear she does not want to do anything on the Thrifty Food Plan, and anything that would restrict future updates is a red line for her.
That's the biggest hurdle to bipartisan agreement on a farm bill and a way to fund commodity title improvements, which both proposals do.
What President Duvall said is this is encouraging to see both proposals. They both have increases to the safety net, which is important as our farmers and ranchers have seen really high inflation the past couple of years.
But taking savings from SNAP or CCC remains contentious. CropLife America commissioned the University of Arkansas to conduct a three-year assessment that evaluates the environmental benefits and impacts of pesticide application on corn, cotton, and soybeans. The study examined crop productivity with and without pesticides, herbicides, insecticides, and fungicides for the three crops. The assessment's key results include the fact that without pesticides, yields of corn, cotton, and soybeans would drop up to 70%, underscoring the indispensable role of pesticides in agriculture. Cultivating corn, cotton, and soybeans without pesticides resulted in upwards of three times more land, water, energy use, and greenhouse gas emissions. Pesticides enhance productivity and significantly reduce pressure on water, land, and energy resources per bushel of corn and soybeans and per pound of cotton. The researchers' findings support the role pesticides play in helping feed, fuel, and clothe the world's growing population in a sustainable manner, according to Alexandra Dunn, CropLife America president and CEO. The International Fresh Produce Association has officially opened its registration for its annual Global Produce and Florals Show, which is happening October 17th through the 19th in Atlanta, Georgia. New this year is the Women's Fresh Perspectives Breakfast, which features a general session speaker and recognition of the Frieda Rapport Kaplan Women's Catalyst Award winner. It will no longer require additional registration. The event, focused on supporting and advancing women in the industry, will be included in the All Access Pass. The show will also feature opportunities for anyone across the supply chain to network, learn, and share. The schedule of events includes networking receptions, keynote speakers, including a highly popular State of the Industry address
from IFPA CEO Kathy Burns, and more learning experiences both in the Education Festival and during sessions like the Food Safety and Tech Exchange sessions on the expo floor. The expo itself is one of the most memorable parts of the event, featuring more than 1,000 exhibitors showcasing the best of the produce and floral industry. More than 20,000 people attend the global show, including more than 3,000 buyers and over 1,000 exhibitors. Attendees hail from every link in the supply chain, all 50 states, and more than 50 countries. Exhibitor registration will open on June 25th, but individual and group registration is available as of now. Go to freshproduce.com for more information.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.